Let's hand the mic over to host Celeste Headlee, discussing a new book on the life and legacy of the slain rapper, the Notorious B.I.G.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall.
It's hard to believe, but almost three decades have passed since that song was released. Christopher Wallace, the rapper known as the Notorious B.I.G., would have turned 50 over the weekend. Of course, he was killed in 1997. Just 6 months or so after his friend turned rival, Tupac Shakur, was murdered. Neither case has been definitively solved, nor have these icons died in the popular imagination. Journalist Justin Tinsley's new book, It Was All a Dream, tracks Biggie's life and the lasting impact of his short career. We're joined by the author now. Hello again, Justin.
Thank you so much for having me back on here. I'm really, really excited for this discussion.
I'm really excited too, and besides just my shock at realizing how much time has passed since he died, it was really interesting to sort of dig into his meteoric rise and the impact of his music. So let's start there with where his career began. He was just 24 years old when he was killed. Can you talk a little bit about how this kid of immigrants born in the Bronx go from dealing drugs to get money to a record contract?
He was born in 1972 to a single mother, obviously Valletta Wallace, and this was around the time when hip-hop was born in the Bronx, roughly around 1973. So he and the genre that he would later become immortalized in were essentially born into the world around the same time. And then by the time the 80s come around, when Christopher Wallace is in his pre-adolescence, this is when the crack cocaine boom starts. So and Reaganomics. Of course, he's influenced by the streets that were around him. He's influenced by the music that's around him. And thankfully, you know, he didn't lose his life in the streets at that point in time. He was allowed to grow into this musician that he eventually became. But the story of Christopher Wallace, it's as you said, it's a meteoric rise. And it's something that when we talk about it now, it feels like it's something that happened, you know, over the course of decades. And of course, he lived multiple decades in his life. But in terms of his musical career, I struggle to think of an artist who accomplished as much in such a short window as the Notorious B.I.G. Because when you think about it, his first album came out in September 1994. He lost his life in March 1997. That was the extent of his career. And a quarter century later, we're still talking about this guy with the reverence of somebody who had a 30, 40, 50 year career.
So there's so much to unpack in what you said. One of the things I really love about your book is the way you describe sort of the development of hip hop as being inextricably linked with what was going on at the time, but also what we came to know, sort of the legend or the myth of Biggie and Tupac, which was this West Coast, East Coast feud. Big was is a symbol of Brooklyn, right, in the East Coast sound. But there's this really interesting part in your book where you talk about his response when he heard The Chronic from Dr. Dre, which was absolutely part of the West Coast sound. Let's take a listen to that.
1, 2, 3 into the four. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope, ready to make an entrance, so back on up.
Before I have to pull the strap off the cut,
give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble, cause ain't nothing but a G-bang, baby. Too low-def G, so we're crazy.
So how, what was Biggie's response to this record in particular?
For one, Dr. Dre was already a very well-known figure in hip-hop, in good and infamous ways. But when you heard that album, and I hope this is the right way to say it, it was like a sonic orgasm. That's how good it was. Like when you heard it, you knew you had never heard anything like it before, and you knew that Dre had tapped into a sound that was going to captivate definitely America, but also the world.
Yeah.
And it sounded like it was based in the streets. And as somebody like a young Biggie Smalls at this point in time, he was like, what is this? Mm. And he heard this, he was like, this is gonna make me change my game. I have to step my game up. Like, if people are gonna be putting out albums like this, I can't put out anything less potent, less addictive, and less, you know, less rib sticking.
And we get his debut album, which a lot of people think is the best debut album in the history of hip hop, Ready to Die. I wonder, what track do you still play regularly? Like, is there one that you're still playing?
Ooh, I mean, if by one you mean the entire album, sure, yes. and you talk about debut albums, just think about this. In 1992, Dr. Dre released his solo debut, The Chronic. 93, Snoop released his solo debut, Doggy Style. In 94, you had Nas's Illmatic and Biggie's Ready to Die. So that's a high collection of quality music to come out in such a short period of time. But in terms of Ready to Die, whew, okay. Probably the track I listen to most is still Things Done Change.
Remember back in the days when had waves, gazelle shades and corn braids, pitching pennies, honeys had the hot top jellies, shooting skelly, motherfucker was all friendly, lounging at the barbecues, drinking brews with the neighborhood crews, hanging on the avenues, turn your pages to 1993, just getting smoked, G, believe me.
When you take into consideration that Ready to Die dropped on September 13th, 1994, literally on that same day, the 1994 crime bill was passed in Washington, D.C., and we understand the legacy of that bill in terms like super predators and how that comes about. This, if you listen to that album under that context now, and especially that song, Things Done Change, it sounds like it's Biggie Smalls' rebuttal to what Washington, D.C. was attempting to pass. Hip hop has always been linked with the political temperature of America in so many ways.
So let's talk about what people very often associate with Big because it's the way he died, and that is the feud with Tupac, who was once his friend. So can you tell us about how close these two men were before they became enemies?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. The beginning of that story was a beautiful friendship. In Los Angeles, Tupac introduces himself and he says, yo, I'm a big fan. Like, yo, let's ride out and let's spend the day together. And they basically spent the entire day together when Big was in L.A. With Puffy and Bad Boy doing some early promotional activities for the label. But that entire day, and it's one of those great hip hop stories that unfortunately has been buried underneath what, you know, eventually became and how they would just spend a day at Tupac's house, just smoking weed, drinking, freestyling back and forth. According to people who were there, one in particular, Groovy Lou, who was Big's former stylist, he was like, it was the most incredible freestyle he's ever seen. It had to be for at least an hour. You know, Pac would freestyle for 5 minutes, then Big would come right back for 5 minutes, and Pac would be, you know, hyping Biggie up the entire time. And then Tupac would go in the kitchen, like, cook food for everybody. And they were just having the time of their lives. And there was so much of a respect factor between the two.
So Tupac was shot in Las Vegas. Talk a little bit about Biggie's reaction.
When it was announced that Tupac passed away, Big was deeply shaken. He was deeply shaken. He felt like that Tupac had turned fans against him with this East Coast, West Coast war. But at the end of the day, Tupac, he was still somebody that Big cared deeply about. And that messed with Biggie up until the day that he died.
Okay, so then let's talk about the day that he died. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what happened the night that Big was killed in Los Angeles.
You know, ironically, Biggie wasn't even supposed to be in Los Angeles that night. He was supposed to fly to London for a promotional trip for Life After Death, which was, of course, going to be his second album, and the album was coming out in a few weeks. But he decided to stay in L.A. So they go to a party at the Peterson Automotive Museum. It's a vibe after party for the Soul Train Music Awards. And by all accounts, it was one of the best parties that anybody had ever been to. So many, like, entertainers, athletes, there were a ton of gang members in there, but there were just a lot of people in there just wanting to have a good time. There were no fights. The party was only shut down because it was an overcrowding issue. And Big and his entourage, they get into their SUVs and they drive off. And as the story goes, they're playing Going Back to Cali, and D-Rock, who is one of Big's closest friends, he mushes him in the head. It was like, you did it, baby, you did it. And, you know, literally seconds later, the car pulls up. A hand reaches out the window with a gun. Four or five shots go into the car, speed off, and within less than an hour, the Notorious B.I.G. was gone.
And if Biggie had not been killed at age 24, what kind of conversation would we be having about his impact?
Yeah. That, and you talk about one of the most powerful what-ifs of my lifetime. It's so painful to think about where he could have taken his career, because he was getting better as an artist at the time of his death. The last two songs that he recorded in his life were 24 hours before he was shot.
Yeah.
So it's painful to know that we never got a chance to see Biggie Smalls in his prime, because he hadn't yet hit his prime, believe it or not.
And yet, as you say, Tupac Shakur's death really shook a lot of people, but he had been shot before. I think it was Biggie Smalls' death that really had such an impact on hip-hop artists and the whole industry.
It was such a dark period of time in those months following Biggie's death because nobody knew where hip-hop was going to go. A lot of people were thinking, okay, like, who's the next rapper that we're going to lose? In terms of music history, there are very few more tragic and sadder days than, in Tupac's case, September 13th, but in Big's case, definitely March 9th, 1997. It's emboldened, it's emblazed in hip-hop as this landmark date where we always remember what we lost and we always mourn over what we were never allowed to have.
Journalist Justin Tinsley, his new book on the Notorious B.I.G. is called It Was All a Dream. Justin, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And if you don't know, now you know. You know. Come on.